Welcome to what's new in Visual Studio and ASP.NET. I take it you're all web developers? Yeah? Awesome. If some of you are Windows 8 Metro-style developers, and you want to build Windows 8 Metro-style applications in HTML5, CSS3, and JavaScript, then there is something here for you too. My name is Mats Christensen, and I'm a program manager on the WPT team, the Web Platforms and Tools. We build everything around our web products for developers. So ASP.NET Framework, IIS, Web Server, the Web Tools in Visual Studio, Web Matrix, WCF, and a lot of other small things related to that. We have done a lot of work with Visual Studio. And before I start, let me just say that what I'm to show you here is Visual Studio and ASP.NET. And hopefully, if we have time, I'll show you some Web Matrix stuff as well. So we've been working pretty hard on Visual Studio 11. Specifically on web standards. So HTML5, CSS3, and ECMAScript 5 has been really, really important for us from the beginning. So traditionally, you might not have, probably don't think of Microsoft and web standards being that closely related. But this time around, we actually did implement it first and foremost from the bottom up. Everything is about web standards and HTML5. So that's a huge difference. And in order for us to do that, we had to rewrite from scratch the JavaScript editor and the CSS editor in Visual Studio. They simply could not handle the new language features. And all this HTML5 is all very good, but you all know that when you create real-world websites, you also have to do some hacks. You also have to do something specific for the specific browsers for it to work. And traditionally, what we have done is that we have flagged all of that and said, hey, that's illegal. Red squiggly, invalid tag, invalid CSS property, and so on. We no longer do that. We will actually help you write hacks. I'll show you later. The JavaScript editor is actually very, very cool because it is built on Chakra. Chakra is the engine of IE9 and IE10 for JavaScript. It is blazingly fast. It is so fast, you can actually tell the difference when you're writing your JavaScript. The way that IntelliSense and syntax check and all that stuff, formatting happens, is like super fast. So, let's look at some code. So all the way in the back, can you see what's going on here? Yeah? All right. So let me just run this. Yes. A website. And some of the stuff we've been doing in the HTML editor is to make it really easy for you to do HTML5. And let's say that I want to do audio. This is just for an example. I now have a snippet for audio that does the right thing. Let's run this guy again. We now have audio. All right, so we have tried to make it really, really easy to do these sort of things. And, of course, you can do the same for video. Some other stuff that we've been working on is like productivity features, stuff that is just nice to have, like makes you happy. And one of the things that makes me the most happy is this little thing I'm going to show you now. Let's say I have this H2 element on my page, but I actually want this to be an article tag of HTML5 for whatever reason. Did you see what happened? This is a stupid little thing. This is a thing you said, I didn't know that I needed this all my life. But now you do, right? That's exactly how I feel. I love this feature. Okay. Let me open the CSS file here. How many people in here have seen the new color selector of Visual Studio 11? Hands up. Just a few of you. Okay. So one of the things that we've been looking at is to improve the workflow that you as a web developer has to go through when you build websites. And one of the things that again and again shows up is how unproductive it is to work with colors in Visual Studio. The way that you copy colors from a website, you need to use some tool to, you know, snag the color and get it back into Visual Studio, maybe open Photoshop or Paint.net. So we wanted to change that. So let's create a new color here. In IntelliSense, I now get a color selector. And what's awesome about this set of colors you see here is that these colors come from VS has parsed your style sheet and found out which colors that you also have in this style sheet. So it's really easy for you to choose the colors you want. You can use the mouse and select whatever you want. Or you can use the arrow keys. We also have like regular rainbow website colors here, but that makes it really, really easy for you to get going and do these things. If I hit arrow key down again, we show you the full thing. This is all in IntelliSense. There's no OK button. There is no new workflow. There's no, you have to click OK to get back into the editor. Just hit enter and the color is submitted. Let's do it again here. So let's just select the color. I can also do opacity because that's new in CSS3. We can do RGBA. At the alpha channel. And I can just slide this guy, and you see here we automatically turn into RGBA. And we snap back to hex if that was what you originally had here when you go back to 100%. I can also take a color from any browser window I have open. Just point and click. And that's that color. What do you think? Is it good stuff so far? Yeah? Immediately when you notice the CSS editor, you'll see that there are some differences. We have outlining now. Right, on comments as well. Here's something that's really, really odd. CSS is the only editor within Visual Studio that never had block commenting. Never. You couldn't do Control KC to comment something. Well, now you can. So some of the big things that we've been looking at is what do you expect from a modern CSS editor? Well, first and foremost, looking back in time through Visual Studio history, it's been more focused around C Sharp and Visual Basic and so on. So they have traditionally have the best support. And we wanted to close that gap for CSS JavaScript and for HTML. So we ported a lot of these features that you're accustomed to from the other editors into CSS. But we've taken it further. I told you about the hack thing, right? So what I always did the first time I installed Visual Studio was that I went to Tools Options and turned off CSS validation. Because I have to use properties such as filter to do opacity in IE7, for instance. Right, and so do you. That's the only way you can do it. And what we used to do was that we gave it a red squiggly. So you see, we don't do that anymore. We even give you IntelliSense for it. We also validate it. This is a hack. What about the star thing or the underscore hacks. We also validate those. So we've been looking at top 500 websites out there, looked at their style sheets. And a very funny thing is a lot of people, they always use these hacks to target I7 and I6 specifically. But sometimes there were mistakes, there were errors. They would do star and then they would have a misspelled, like star with width, but they would have it misspelled. And we saw time over again and again that all the hacks was done wrong. So we decided that we want to help you do hacks. Also, look at this guy. If I format the document right now, you'll see that we correctly indent according to the rules of the cascade, your CSS. The header has an H1, which is defined here. So it is a child of the header tag in the cascade order. And we actually maintain that indentation. So you can nest as deep as you want by placing your selectors correctly. So let's do some border radius. I can do border radius or I can do Brad. Also works for border radius. It now auto reduces a little bit more cleverly than it did before. FW, font weight. All right. Let's do border radius. Look at this. We now give you all the browser-specific tags, the so-called vendor-specific tags, or properties in this case. Let's do it again. And we will automatically figure out what browsers support the different elements. So border radius has a WebKit and a Mozilla browser specifics, but if I do like a transform, you see we have the IE10 specific and we have the Opera as well. But that means that we now have snippets. We now have snippets in CSS3. Oh, sorry, in the CSS editor, and that's specifically useful for CSS3 because of this issue, right? You get all the vendor specifics. Mozilla, MS, Opera, WebKit, and there's like hundreds, at least. Okay. So now we have rounded corners. Okay. So let me open a JavaScript file. Again, we have outlining all the things that you expect from what you're used to in C# and Visual Basic. Here's a funny thing. Go to definition, F12. You've waited for that a long time, haven't you? I know I have. It's actually so cool that it'll take you to external files. So if you are referencing a jQuery function from your own JavaScript file, and you go to definition, you jump into the jQuery function in the jQuery.js file itself. And that's really, really interesting because what actually goes on in jQuery is it's kind of a black box, right? So I'm curious, so I love this feature. And speaking of HTML5 and ECMAScript, we of course have like all the new WebSockets file readers and what you would expect from a fully HTML5 and ECMAScript 5 standards-based editor. We do a lot of stuff on IntelliSense as well. In this build that I have right here, you won't see as much. But you will see it coming in the future that we're going to do a lot of work on IntelliSense. make it really, really intelligent, function overloads, and a lot of cool stuff. So working with JavaScript in VS 11 is going to be much easier than it was before. Okay. If you have any questions, just raise your hand. It's fine. All right. So this whole workflow thing that we've been looking at also revealed some things about the web forms developers. And if you look back to when ASP.NET was born 10 years ago or so, it was a lot of, you know, WYSIWYG, drag a control onto the design surface, and you had your website. So especially within the last couple of years, we've seen a massive shift to the source editor, the source code editor, a move away from the designer. But the problem was that there were some cases where you just needed the designer. There were things that you could not do in the source editor. Stuff like bringing up wizards that added data sources or stuff like that was not possible unless you loaded the designer. So what we've done, let's give this an ID. So traditionally, if you wanted to add an event handler to the onClick event of a button in ASP.NET web forms, we've seen a lot of people go into the designer and then either double-click the button to create the click event or use the property grid to hook up whatever other event that they wanted. And the problem is that the designer sometimes takes a little time to spin up. It's not exactly the best workflow if you just want to be in the code editor. So we've changed that by introducing this guy. And if I click it, I get this. And I will continue writing my markup. I will stay in the code editor. Whenever I'm ready to actually do something about the event handler here, you'll notice that the code behind popped up here in the background. And the button save click event handler was created for me. So we have a question? Go to definition. Is most likely coming? Yes. We haven't built it yet, but it's on top of our backlog. Yeah. Oh, and if I already had some event handlers that would match the signature, it will show up here as well. Let's do a grid view. So notice this little smart tag is what it's called. There it is. In this build, it shows up on ASP.NET server controls. It will show up on all HTML elements, but what you're seeing here only shows up on the ASP.NET controls. And what it does is, you can use control dot, by the way, like you can in C Sharp. Let me just use the mouse here. We've actually taken all the designer stuff that you could only access from within the designer, and we've moved it into the editor. So the exact same smart task is what it's called in the designer. The exact same smart task drop-down menu is now available in Source View. And it brings up the same wizards. You can add your columns. You can, and it produces something like this. So a huge time saver here as well. And a final thing. I can right-click any selection I make, and I can say extract to user control. And here it is. Why we didn't do it before, I don't know, but now it's here. And what it actually, it's actually pretty clever. This is not just adding some random code. You see it registers it up here. And some people register their user controls in the web config. If you have done that, we will respect whatever is in there and we will do the right thing. Also, if you already have another user control that has a tag prefix of, I don't know, block because you're writing some block software, for instance, we will keep the same tag prefix. So you'll get less pollution. So what you don't have here, but what we are actually working on right now, is another little simple thing. To drag a user control from Solution Explorer onto the editor surface. I can't show you because I don't have it here in the build, but something that we know the people use the designer for. They switch to design view, take the user control, and drag it onto the design view. They don't have to do that anymore. Okay. And then we have another thing, a thing that I'm really, really excited about, the page inspector. So, yeah, we have a question. So IntelliSense on IDs?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No. The short answer. Hey, it's a great feature request. We do have ASP.NET.UserVoice.com where you can create feature requests and vote on them. A lot of people have done that, and we actually look at that every day. So do that. That'd be awesome. All right, so the page inspector. Imagine that you inherit a website that you have to make some modifications to. And it could be like a little bit of a complex website from one of the bigger, maybe it's like an Umbraco site you inherit from someone. And you want to change a picture or some text, but where is it located in your solution? Multiple projects, hundreds of files, user controls, server controls, pages, master pages, layout pages. Where is the image located? Well, now I can right-click and say View in Page Inspector on the project or on a ASPX. Here we go. So it actually spins up a browser instance. This has IE9. It hosts IE9. It hosts the browser tools, the F12 tools of IE as well. Let me just hide this for a second. So it has an inspect mode right here. Click that one. I can now click wherever, and it will highlight the exact place in the markup where these things came from, just by hovering over it. This makes it really, really easy to do those big projects, and you always know where you are. But it does even more than that. So let's take our H2 here. I can see what styles are applied. And if I click the style, it'll take me directly to the style sheet. And I can now change some stuff. So let's change the color of the background here. Let's make it red. Now it knows that the source file is out of sync. And it says, do Control Alt Enter. I do that, and now we have a red background. So this is kind of early for this feature. But what is really, really nice, what I do is I drag it onto my secondary monitor. And I actually use it for prototyping and for seeing what I'm doing without having the workflow of Alt-Tab between my browser, hitting F5, and back to Visual Studio. This now happens automatically with a shortcut key combination. Of course, we plan to have it work with all the other browsers as well, but we haven't quite gotten there yet. Yes, question? This works for anything ASP.NET. This works for web pages. It works for Razor, MVC, MVC, and web forms and everything. The only thing that is required is that you have to run .NET 4.5. You have to have it installed, but your website can target ASP.NET 4.0. So if you have a 4.0 website today and you install the latest Visual Studio, you automatically get the new framework. The new framework is an in-place upgrade. So that means that we actually replace the DLLs that run all these things from 4.0 to 4.5. And we need the 4.5 to execute this because we instrument your code. We simply send out a lot of information that the page inspector knows how to interpret and then knows to orchestrate the different things. It simply says, oh, this piece of text comes from that file. And we need the new framework for that. But your app does not have to use it. You can use 4.0. Okay. ASP.NET. We have done a lot of work lately in trying to remove our components out of Visual Studio. And last year, about a year ago, in the beginning of last year, we released NuGet. How many people in here use or know what NuGet is? Whoa. A lot of you. Cool. Because that allows us to have a much more frequent update to all the different things, and we can ship things out of band, is what we call it. We've done it with MVC, and that means that we can rev MVC once a year, whereas the rest of Visual Studio and the .NET framework is like every 2-3 years, right? So we now include all the templates through NuGet. So let's create an MVC 4 app here. Did you hear it just came out in beta? It's pretty cool, huh? All right, it's got some mobile stuff. Let's just do this. So you'll notice here that the scripts that we include, yikes, a lot of scripts, they're all NuGet packages, pre-installed NuGet packages. And this is simply because we realized, and this makes total sense, that if we now add the latest jQuery, and then ship Visual Studio at some point. At the time that you guys get that version of Visual Studio, all the JavaScript files, jQuery, jQuery UI, will all be old. So now it's just a matter of open this guy, and then go to your NuGet packages here. And you can see we probably already have some of them that can be updated. Yeah, so... So since this build, five of them were updated, but it's pretty cool. We actually ship a lot of it, a lot of NuGet packages in the templates now. It helps you to be up to date all the time without having to think about it. Oh, now I'm here. Let's just run this app. So this is the new templates. This is MVC 4. You get the exact same template in web forms and in web pages and in all the different flavors that we've got. You get the same layout. Of course, they're built differently because they're on top of different UX frameworks, webforms, and MVC, and pages. But they're all HTML5, and they all look like this, and they're all mobile-ready. Notice the menu up here. You'll see when my screen gets smaller, it kind of still looks nice. So we do that with CSS3 media queries. And some of these stuff are new to a lot of people, and with these templates, it's really easy to get going. And you'll see some other really, really cool stuff in terms of Facebook authentication and those kind of things come in the templates. How many people here do Facebook authentication or would like to? Yeah. It's really, really difficult. I mean, those of you who've tried to do Facebook authentication or Twitter authentication, it is not straightforward. So we're going to ship an easy way for you to do that across the different frameworks. All right. Okay. Here's a good one. In the world of HTML5 and CSS3 and so on, we add a lot of JavaScript. We add a lot of style sheets to our files, to our websites. And a couple of months back, I don't know if you saw that, we redesigned our website, ASP.NET, the website, ASP.NET. And it was slow for some reason. And it turns out that we had like 50 to 60 requests go into all the JavaScript files and all the style sheets. And it just took forever to download all that stuff. But luckily, we already came up with a solution to our own problem here, and that is bundling and minification is now part of the framework. So it doesn't matter if you use web forms, MVC, web pages, you can now use this. And it works by convention. So instead of referencing a JS file directly, that JS file is located in some subfolder somewhere. Instead, you can now reference the folder itself. And the framework then takes all the JavaScript files in that folder and creates one file out of it, minifies it, strips all the white space, gzips it, and sends it to the client. So here's an example of that. I got some scripts some JavaScripts in a folder called scripts. And you can see at the bottom here how I can then reference it. I don't need to use a script manager and web forms or anything like that. I can do it from an HTML page, .htm, just by referencing like this. I simply reference the script folder and then give it JS at the end, like you see here. And we do that because sometimes you have scripts and style sheets in the same folder. So you can just specify, give me all the JS files in the scripts folder, or the CSS files in the script folder. Go. Yes, the question is, what about when you have to have the files in a specific order? You need to have jQuery before your own custom scripts that uses jQuery. We actually know about those things. So we know about those libraries. So all the different libraries, we know that they come before your own custom stuff. Same with reset CSS. If you use a file called reset CSS, it has to be the first file. We also know about that. And you can create your own sorting if you want to. But we come built in with support for jQuery, jQuery UI, all the jQuery stuff, and prototype and ext.js and so on. Let me use Firefox for this one. Okay. So, here's an example. I reference the styles folder. I have a folder called styles. And then I give it the CSS at the end there. to say, give me all the .css files. And if we view source, you'll see that we actually strip all white space. This is the CSS file I had opened before, and it was nicely formatted and indented and all that stuff. JavaScript is the same. Sometimes you don't want to have the whole folder convention. Sometimes you just want to say, hey, I want to bundle that JS file over there and that JS file over there and maybe that whole directory of JS files over there. So you can do static bundles. That means you can define your own. We have two concepts, dynamic bundles, which are the folder-based ones, where you can hook anything up. And then you have the static bundles. And it's super simple. This is what it looks like. So what I'm doing here is I'm creating a new bundle. And I say this bundle should exist at the URL called root static bundle. And it should use the JS minifier that we ship that minifies everything. And these are the scripts that I want. I could also add an entire directory. And the way that we actually do this is that we take cache dependencies on the individual files. If any one of the files that you've bundled is updated, the cache refreshes. Right, so you will always see the reflection of this, even though you have like you cache the thing in the browser for a year. We have a mechanism for that. We haven't quite ironed it out completely for all the different frameworks and how you would insert it on your page. But it's very simple. It's like you have the URL today, like you can do, what's it called? href if you're using Razor or something like that. We have something similar. But you'll see a pretty good story on that too. So here we have it, static bundle. And that's it. You'll see that the URL indeed is static bundle. And because I defined it myself, I don't need to have the slash JS at the end. What we're doing is that we're using routing. So this is basically, we're just registering a route. We have a question. Is the dynamic one recursive? Does it include subfolders? There is a Boolean flag. You can set it to true, and then it will take all the subfolders. But by default, it is not. We have another question. Does it follow Dojo? No. It doesn't, not any of the script loading libraries, it does not. My idea is that it probably will, but right now the bits that we have here, this is not even in beta yet. This is still early. And we actually shipped this as a NuGet package. So the Microsoft Web Optimization DLL is actually a NuGet package. So we're going to rev it pretty quickly and pretty frequently. So hopefully, maybe if it isn't out in the first version, it will be out maybe months later, not 3 years later. Yeah, and here's an example of why this is important. Before, we have 5 requests, and after we do bundling and minification, we only have 2 requests, and the file sizes are smaller. So that's kind of the idea. All right, how many people here has hooked up async in their web pages, websites? A few of you. It's really painful, isn't it? I have done it in the past. We've always shipped with the iasync.http handler, for instance. But it's been a really hard. Here's an example of how ugly it used to be. And this is even a simple one. So what I'm doing here, this is an MVC controller action that is asynchronous. and I'm making 2 web requests. And when those complete, in the background, on a background thread, I return the view. That's a lot of code for something as simple as that. And I have to hook up callbacks. I do it as asynchronous delegates here, and it's not real pretty. And this is the simple. This is a simple example. You don't see any begin invoke, end invoke, or anything like that. This is a simple example, and it's really ugly. This is what it looks like in 4.5. 2 lines of code, because we do the whole async await paradigm. So this is like a whole talk in itself about async programming, but we can now finally take advantage of it. And it's really, really important, especially when we're building websites and we talk about scalability. Because a standard website that runs ASP.NET doesn't really use the CPU more than 5-10%. And that's because we have a threat pool. Every request from a browser to the web server is handed a threat from the threat pool. Whenever that request is done and a response is sent back, the threat is released back into the threat pool, ready for the next browser request to take it. Now, if we do stuff like this, stuff that is I/O bound, network, database, file I/O, we're going to keep the threat for, let's say, 3 seconds. That's how long it takes to do these 2 calls. Then we're actually making it more difficult. Or sorry, we're kind of just taking all the threats from the threat pool and allowing less people or less browsers to make requests. And that's why we only use 10% of the CPU that runs a website. If we could free up all the threats, we could utilize the CPU much more efficiently. So this is a really, really great news for us web developers that we finally have this baked in as first-class citizens. So you all know about the membership providers, right? Profile providers and all that. It's been there since ASP.NET 2.0. The problem was, they were actually quite good, but the problem was they only worked on SQL Server. So we fixed that now, and then I'll work on SQL Compact and, of course, Azure. So we've actually completely rewritten them. And it's a NuGet package. Again, it's something that we will update pretty frequently. Just wanted to mention that. Okay. Request validation. How many people in here knows what request validation is? Hands up. All right, that's a lot of you. How many of you turns it off? About half, okay. So request validation is something that's been in the ASP.NET framework for a long time. And it's a security feature. It stops potential malicious attacks to your pages. Let's say you have a form and you type in some HTML, some script tags, some JavaScript. Request validation have stopped that in the past. But people turn it off because it's really difficult to deal with. Let me show you here what I mean. Let's open this guy. So here's a very, very common scenario. You have some input fields. And in the case here, I've used TinyMCE to let people format their comment on my blog, for instance. And, you know, so they can bold it, they can make it italic, and so on. So when I submit the form, I get request validation error. It says, hey, you're sending HTML back. That could potentially be dangerous, which it could. And what you have been doing, and I have been doing, I'm not going to lie, I have been doing too, is that I've just turned it off. Either for just this one page or this controller action in MVC, or maybe in web config, just turn it off completely for the entire site. That is not recommended, but yeah, I've done that too. So what we've done is that we now have a granular request validation. So I can keep it turned on, and I can now go into my text area here, my text box, and I can say, validate request mode, disabled. Let's update this guy. And I can now save it without compromising the rest of my controls and the rest of my site. And if I were to, let's do this guy. If I were to do it up here, you'll see that it still works because I didn't disable it for the first text box for my name. So a very, very awesome security feature here for something that was really difficult to do before or just annoying, basically. Data annotations. They were introduced a little while back. We used them for MVC for some stuff. We've now expanded them. They now support more things like credit cards, emails, and so on. You can do compare on the data annotations. Like for passwords, when you have to repeat a password and they have to be equal, the two password fields. I'll get back to this in a little bit. Just wanted to call out some of the new stuff here. So we've been working also on the performance. And we now have 30% faster startup time. So when you cold start, you know, the first request that comes to your cold website now starts up 30% faster. But not only that, it also uses 30% less memory. You get all that just by installing .NET 4.5. You don't have to do anything. Incremental file uploads, something that we had to do because that's how the file reader in HTML5 and JavaScript works. So we have now have input streams that support it. We have the anti-cross-site scripting library that was that we've had out there for several years now is now baked in. So you get like first-class encoding, URL encoding, HTML encoding, and so on. All right, web forms. Again, HTML5. You saw the template from MVC4. That's the same template we're going to use for web forms. And there were some things that simply wasn't possible to do in regards to HTML5. It was not possible to have an input type date. So if you had a text box, ASP colon text box, if you wrote an attribute called type and set it to date, it wouldn't show up. It was impossible. You could only do text, multiline, and password. But now we've added support for the rest of the HTML5 attributes here. Finally. And another thing that was impossible was to upload multiple files. So the file upload control actually only took one file. And you know, that was fine for many years, and then came HTML5, and now you can upload as many files if you want, as you want in one at one time. So we had to update that as well. All right. We've seen some of the new good stuff. We've seen Modernizer. We also include Modernizer so we can maintain the HTML5 thing and have browser backwards compatibility. So request validation. All right. Strongly typed data controls. How many people in here are using web forms? Hands up. Don't be shy. A lot of you. We know that around 90% of ASP.NET users are using web forms. So it's something that we're still heavily invested in. And one of the new features is strongly type data stuff here. So we have a model type attribute on, in this case, a form view. We have it on repeaters, grid views, and so on. And I can give it a type. In this case, I give it a person type. And what that allows me to do is that when I do my data binding expressions, and I'll get full IntelliSense for it. Before I had to do like a eval or bind and then put in a string of the property name and all that stuff. Now I get IntelliSense, but that also means that I get compile time errors. Before, this errors would only show up runtime. And you might also notice select method, insert method, and update method. This is model binding. So you know model binding, or I've heard of model binding from MVC. And that's a really, really powerful feature. And because MVC is shipped like once a year, it actually has some newer components. But then whenever the new version of ASP.NET Framework comes out, we sync things back up. So sometimes a feature will show up first in web forms, and sometimes it'll show up first in MVC. But at some point, we sync them up. And model binding is one of them. So if I go to my code behind, you can see here I can bind with get persons. I'm just using a EF code first thing here. It doesn't really matter much. But this is a very, very clean way to do model binding. And look, it takes a person. Person object is first name, last name, that's it, and ID in this case. But the really, really cool thing here is that I don't have to send those things in view state. I don't have to send those things as query strings and then have to do request.query string, blah, 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 and then try parse into an integer and all those things that we do all the time. I just expect to get a person object, and we do the model binding for you. So you get this very, very clean interface. It looks very much like MVC. Yeah, this is it, by the way. All right. So it now uses model binding and strongly typed data binding as well. Question? What about what, sir? Nested repeaters. I have not tested that scenario, but yeah, that should work. So, yeah, so if you have nested repeaters, will it work with all that stuff? Yeah, because it should. I actually haven't tried that, but I'm sure it will, because each of the repeaters will have those attributes. That's a good question. Okay, yeah. So if you're using data source controls today, or if you use, repeater or grid view dot data source equals some array of objects, and then you do repeater dot data bind, instead of doing all that stuff, you can just use this. Oh, yeah. There was something about the whole data annotations. Data annotations, that's right. So let's look at the model of the person here. Very, very simple object. So what I can do is that I can say that, well, first name should be required, and like last name should have like string length maximum of 15 characters. Let me just build this guy. Yeah, let's go back to. That was not it. There we go. So what I did was, in my model, I simply just was able to say, what are my validation requirements? So instead of doing it in the markup, I can do it on the model itself. This is part of the whole unobtrusive JavaScript validation stuff that we're doing as well. I'll get back to that. But that means that we can now, on the server side alone, we can just say, these are my constraints. These are my validation criteria. And automatically, those are reflected. Let me just tab out of the first name field. It will get the star here because I told that it was required. So it already knows these things. And we get, this is not server-side validation, this is client-side validation. But the only thing I did was I changed the data annotation on my model, the person model, and we automatically get it out on the clients. Now, if I don't have JavaScript in my browser for whatever reason, the server will still validate like we are used to in the validators we use in web forms. So you get all the benefits by just adding those parameters or attributes. Yes? What about error message? It works in the same way. You're going to have your validation summary. You can, in this case, I'm actually using a field templates. I don't have much time, so I'll, it's basically here, dynamic data. These two are, actually. Here we go. The dynamic validator. The dynamic validator, instead of using a required field validator or a compare validator, I just use dynamic validator because it looks at the actual attributes, the data annotations on my model class. And in here, I can do as ever, you know, it has an error message, I assume. Property right here. Right, so that works exactly as you've used to. Saw that thing, saw that thing. Yeah, so unobtrusive JavaScript. Yeah, let's take a question first here.
In regards to the point just now, if you place that all in a repeater, will it repeat the JavaScript over and over again?
No. I'll show you what it does. Because this is what it used to do when you did the, it would put all this goop in your HTML. Up until now, whenever you did client-side validation or you used like all the different validators that we ship in web forms, it would add a lot of JavaScript like this, and it would kind of just fill out the whole thing. So it does not do that anymore, and it doesn't repeat that JavaScript. Instead, we have the jQuery validate unobtrusive JS. And what it does is that it looks on the at the attributes, the data dash attributes, that we set on the span tag over here. Input tags. So you get an HTML5 way of doing this correctly without all the goop. We just add some attributes to your input types. All right? So this is very unobtrusive, very, very clean way of doing it. So we don't repeat it. We just add these data dash attributes to your input fields. Okay. MVC4. I'm not going to ruin the surprise because Scott Guthrie is doing an MVC4 talk later this afternoon. So if you're interested in that, you should definitely go. I do want to touch on some things, though, that we now do fully mobile-ready views and view engines. So if you want to write a mobile app, you saw, you know, I did before I did file new project MVC, you saw the mobile thing in there. Even if you didn't do that, there is a way for you to target specific views to specific mobile phones. You can do just mobile in general, that means everything mobile, like small screen stuff. Or you can do iPhone specific or Windows phone specific in a very, very easy way. Scott Guthrie is going to show you all that. And then I'm just going to mention that we merged the ASP.NET team with the WCF team last summer, 6 months ago. You know WCF? It's the thing you use, and then you have all this weird stuff in your web config that you don't know how it got there and how it works, right? That's WCF. But because we now combine the two teams, we're now leveraging all the good stuff from MVC, like the routing, model binding, validation filters, and so on, with all the good stuff of Web API. Web API is kind of the new WCF. So you get like really, really nice REST interfaces. You can do, you know, it kind of scaffolds everything for you. You can do put, delete, all those REST methods. It handles content negotiation for you. This is really difficult to do. Well, maybe not difficult, but it takes a lot of manual code to do that. Content negotiation means that if I request something from your API, I can send an accept header saying, I want an image. I accept images. So when I make a request to like get contact information and I accept images, I might get back a picture of a person. If I send back, I want JSON, you get a JSON representation of this person's profile. And all of this is handled automatically for you. So you get kind of best of both worlds on these things. Okay. I'm going to switch to Web Matrix now. Should we do some questions first? If you have some Visual Studio questions. There is one. Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Have we improved JavaScript debugging in Visual Studio? Yes. It is super fast right now. One of the things that was annoying when you debugged in Visual Studio, I know that a lot of you probably use Firebug or something else, but if you did use Visual Studio, one of the things that was really annoying was that it was so slow, and sometimes it was painful. But now it's Internet Explorer 9 fast, so to speak. All right, how many people here use Web Matrix or have played around with it? A couple of fans, all right. So I want to call out some new features that we do have in Web Matrix. Web Matrix is our like entry-level offering, but that doesn't mean that it's not for hardcore pro guys like you. It is, because it is a very, very nice way of doing stuff. For instance, I use it when I want to update my blog, because I can remote into it with a new version of Web Matrix. This is the remote site. This is not files on my disk. This is actually my blog right here. And I can open my files. And I edit them, I click save, and what happens is that it FTPs back into my site. So it's like a really, really fast way for me to update stuff. And I'm a hacker kind of guy. I don't, you know, source control? What is that, right? It's just my personal blog. I mean, how important is that? But let's say you want to do some more advanced stuff. So even there are some scenarios where Visual Studio does not even come close to what we can do here. Let's create a new website. Let's do Umbraco. How many people here know Umbraco? Umbraco is one of the biggest .NET content management systems. I guess you can say, yeah, let's accept that, let's install that. It's going to use a version of SQL Server Compact, and it's going to just install like this. This came from the web. It's done. Okay. And here's what I get. Now, this is super, super awesome. Umbraco has been so helpful that in their template that they have on our gallery, where I just downloaded this, I downloaded it from the internet, in case you didn't get that. Now it's here. I have all my stuff here. But you see the two buttons on the top? They have included extensions that make it easier to deal with Umbraco that extends Web Matrix. I didn't do anything. I didn't install them. They just came with Web Matrix. How cool is that? And if I do, I just did F1, help, it knows that we're dealing with Umbraco here. And also, hey, there's some stuff on Plural site, some videos you might want to see. There's some content, some help content, not from Microsoft, but from somewhere else. That's really awesome. Here's the actual site. you'll notice that over here, we have like two folders that are that have a lock. That's because that's the like the system folders, like we know from Windows. And you probably don't want to edit any of those files, because at some point there's going to be an update to Umbraco, and everything in there is going to be overwritten. And we know that, so we kind of help you out and say, hey, maybe don't do this. And that's all new in WebMatrix 2. Here's another thing that's new in WebMatrix 2. Find and replace. Yep. Finally, I know you've been waiting for that. It's now in WebMatrix 2. It didn't make it version 1. What can I say? Anyway, I use this all the time because it's just so easy for me. And I consider, I'm a web developer. I've always been a web developer. And I use this entry-level tool because it's just so easy. And we actually use the same CSS editor in WebMatrix as we do in Visual Studio. Yes? Is this integrated with GFS? WebMatrix? Yes. And that is all I can say about that at this point in time. Yeah, so no, so in Visual Studio 11, the CSS editor with the color picker and all that fancy stuff is also in WebMatrix. Going forward in the future, the HTML editor will be shared as well, not for version 2 and not for Visual Studio 11. But they will be aligned, so the tools will be aligned. It will be the same experience. By the way, this tool also does PHP with IntelliSense and the whole thing, in case you want us to do that. Okay. So, here's some resources for you. I mean, you can contact me if you want. Send me an email. Ask a lot of questions. We don't really keep as many secrets in the web platforms and tools team. You know that a lot of some of the other teams in Microsoft are very secretive about some of the stuff. We can talk about stuff. We can say, yeah, we're going to do that. So if one of you asks me, are we going to have pseudo selector IntelliSense? Yes. I can say, yes, we are going to have that. We actually just built it. So if you have any questions on, you know, what's coming up on the web platform, send me an email. Also, we have like a big white paper with all the features described on our ASP.NET website, ASP.NET vNext. And you'll see a lot of new stuff coming up there very soon. We have more videos. We have more features. And there's like screenshots and stuff, so it's not... It's easy to read. And again, Nougat.org. Nougat is awesome. So, you should go see ASP.NET MVC 4 by Scott Guthrie later today. But even more importantly, you should come to my tips and tricks for ASP.NET developer talk tomorrow, where we're going to have a little fun and explore some of the things that that's available today that you probably didn't know about. So, if there is not any further questions, are there any further questions? We got one here, yep. When is the release date? I don't know. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for showing up.